From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. It's truly a pleasure that you have allowed the Current Sports crew and I to be a part of your afternoon once again on this October 21st, 2013. Now, if you haven't heard and live under a rock, yes, Tigers skipper Jim Leland has decided to step down after 8 seasons with the team. Yes, the Leland reign is officially ending. To many, including myself, is not a huge surprise. Now, we are asking you throughout the entire show to give us your thoughts on Jim Leland. Do you think he was a great manager during his 8 seasons? Is him stepping down the right move for the future of the Tigers? And what is his legacy? Give us a call, 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. I'll also be reading comments on these questions from our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. And some of you have even tweeted me at Al Martin WKAR. Again, what are your thoughts on Jim Leland stepping down as the Detroit Tigers manager? Give us a call, 517-355-9527. And what was a pretty emotional press conference, you know, as understandably so. We're talking about Jim Leland here. Jim, he addressed the media this morning holding an 11:30 a.m. presser. And, here was Jim's opening statement.
Well, I truly think this is going to be a very good team next year, but I think it would have been totally selfish on my part. I think I would have been coming back for the wrong reason. I've never been a guy to take a paycheck if I didn't think I could do this. This job entails a lot more than people think. There's a lot more than writing out the lineup and pulling a pitcher. And like I said, I'm low on fuel. I could see it coming. The trips were starting to get tough. If you look at what we just did in the postseason, went out to Oakland back and forth twice, then flew into Boston, got in at 9 o'clock in the morning. Like I said, I'm going to be 69 years old. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm proud of it. But the fuel's getting a little low. And that's the one thing I'm really happy about. I think I still got a chance to get a World Series ring here. At least I think they'll give me one if they win it next year. But it's in good hands. Like I said, we're just changing the guard a little bit. That's all we're doing. And somebody's going to inherit a good team. And I pray and hope that you give them the same chance that you gave me. I think they'll do great. And I'll be pulling every second for them. And I really hope this sounds kind of selfish, but I hope within the next 2 or 3 years, I get a chance to throw out the first pitch at Comerica Park. And I'm also going to be, shortly after the press conference, I am going to be an official member of the Skippers Rippers Club. I'm going to be ripping the Skippers. I'm going to be.
Jim, over here, the job of managers changed a lot over the years that you've been in baseball. What small parts of it will you miss, and what parts of it will you actually not miss?
Well, the obvious answer always is I'm going to miss the players. I'm going to miss the people that you work with. You develop a relationship with players over the years. And today I want to thank all the players, not just the players that played for me at Detroit, but all the players I've ever had. I have so much respect for them because they're so good, and it's so tough to be good at this level. So obviously you're going to miss the relationships. You'll miss the clubhouse. You miss the relationships. I'll miss the competition. I guess that it's just become such a tiring job now with all the travel at my age. I think that has a factor. But all the media responsibilities that you have to go through. All the taking care of some players' personal problems or trying to help them along those lines. This job entails so much that, I don't think people really understand that. So, I'm not going to miss some of that stressful stuff that you have to go through, but I'm certainly going to miss it. I was here because I like to compete. I wasn't good enough to play, but I really enjoyed managing people like Al Kalines and the Rocky Colavitos and the Harvey Keynes and the Mickey Loliches and the Miguel Cabreras and the Maggio. That's an honor. And I've enjoyed it. I'll miss it.
if you could share with us maybe the people you told after September 7th, and also share with us what you're most proud of from your years here as a Tiger manager.
Well, I'm not going to hold anything back here. I'm going to tell you, like I said, I told you exactly how this went down. I will tell you two people that I told. Three people. My wife, Katie, Gene Lamont, and Tony La Russa, because I wanted to get some advice on how to be fairest to the organization so that Dave could move forward. What did he think the timing should be? If I knew I wasn't going to come back, I thought it would have been totally phony to wait till the end and say, hey, I'm not coming back. I didn't think that would be fair, particularly to somebody that treated me as well as I've been treated here. So there were like three people that knew, and they gave me their word, and obviously it never got out. So those were the people that knew. Like I said, I wanted to get some advice from Tony because he went through this a little bit, although his was a little bit different. And I just wanted to make sure that I did everything first class and that I didn't do anything that wouldn't, you know. And my moments here, they're priceless. They really are. They're priceless. I mean, to be in that Tiger dugout and see all the fans and see all the celebrations and see all the towels waving quite a few times in postseason. Obviously, we didn't get the big prize. It breaks my heart for Mr. Ilitch more than it does for me because I've been fortunate enough to win a big prize once. But it's just been absolutely fantastic. And as you can tell, I don't hear real well because I'm not sure where it's coming from. So I got to tell you about this during the playoff. My wife and I were in church, and I told her that I whispered to her that I let one of those silent fluffies of mine, what should I do? And she said, get a new battery for your hearing aid. Are there any other questions? This should be a fun day. Any other questions? You're rid of me. Be happy. You ought to be celebrating. You're all going to go out and get drunk. I know you are.
You know, for me personally, I'm definitely going to miss Jim Leland. To me, he was such had a great personality. Of course, he did give the media hell from time to time. I mean, you know, he always acted with a chip on his shoulder. And I think that's what, you know, that attitude kind of bled onto the Tigers ball club. And, you know, is a big reason why, you know, to their success. But, hey, you can argue with me on that. 517-355-9527. I personally will miss him. There's others out there who are certainly critical of him. Some of you might be out there, you know, like Jim is saying, going out there rejoicing. Probably get drunk tonight. Jim Leland's gone. I don't know. But we would love to hear your thoughts on him. I tell you what, he's one well-respected manager, I tell you that, you know, throughout his tenure, throughout his career. 517-355-9527. Give us your thoughts on Jim Leland. Now, this was actually, we played, that was a clip in the middle of Jim's press conference addressing, you know, why he retired, talking about the loss, you know, this year, you know, regretting some things. But here was his initial statement as soon as he walked in the room. Here was his opening statement concerning him stepping down as Tigers manager for 8 seasons.
I want to make this perfectly clear, and I want to please clearly understood what's going on today. I've told most all of you in the past, including my boss here and Mr. Ilitch, when it's time, it's time. And it's time. It's time to step down from the managerial position of Detroit Tigers and accept another position yet to be determined. But as I said, it's time. But the most important thing that I would like to get across today is so that there'll be really, I'm still grumpy, so there'll be no silly questions. I want to tell you exactly how this went down. So there won't be any speculation as to whether, you know, they gave me the benefit of the doubt, said we want you to resign, that would be classier. We don't really want to just say we're not bringing you back. That was not the case at all. On September 7th in Kansas City, after we shellacked the Royals Friday night, I asked Dave if I could meet him for coffee in the morning. And I did that, and the conversation basically went like this. I said, Dave, I don't know what your plans were for next year. And he said, well, you're my manager. And I said, well, I'm not going to be the manager. I said, it's time. I don't feel it will be fair to this organization, to the players, to Mr. Ilitch, to the media, to the fans, or for anybody else for me to continue to go on. The fuel was starting to get low. and that's just the way it went. I was asked to come back, but this has gone on for a long time. Dave's known it for a long time. I hope that nobody is upset that this didn't get out, because it's a pretty simple reason why it didn't get out. We never told any players. There were probably three people that knew about this. We didn't tell any players because we didn't want to upset the apple cart. We were trying to win another championship, in which we did, some form of a championship. We didn't want this to be a distraction. We had said all along that my contract here would never be a distraction, and it hasn't been. And we went on to win the Central Division, and, of course, later on let a American League championship get away, to be honest with you, which I apologize for. I'm very sorry that we didn't get that done for you. But it wasn't because everybody wasn't on the same page and everybody didn't do their best. That was the first part. The second part of this was I informed my players Saturday night after the game in Boston that I would not be returning. I didn't know how to take it when they clapped. I wasn't sure if they... I informed them, and you could hear a pin drop. It really wasn't, believe it or not, it really wasn't that emotional. I spent the last 24 hours promising myself I would not get emotional today, and I'm not gonna, believe it or not. But it was touching. I had a lot of nice comments from my players. I love them. Like I said, we talk about the playoffs and everything. There was never any need, in my opinion, and there never has been in my managerial career, to ever single anybody out in a situation like that, a player. My philosophy has always been, as a group, as a organization, as that team, manager, and coaches, collectively, we just did not get it done. And that's the attitude I've always had. Some people have said, and I've said this to several of you before, that I've protected my players to a fault. I hope that's something I take to my grave. That's just the way it is. It's been a thrill. I can't, like I said in the release, you know, I came here to change talent to team. If you read the release, and I think that from the help of this entire organization, I think we've done that. We've won quite a bit. I'm very grateful to have been a small part of that. I really, truly am. I'm going to be accepting another position. As I said, I don't know exactly what that's at, but I want to retire a Tiger. I'm not totally retiring today. I'm just not going to be in the dugout anymore. And I hope and pray that you give the next manager the same respect and the same chance that you gave me, which is also in the press release. It was absolutely terrific. I know I've had my critics, all managers do, and I know I've probably had a few people that like me, believe it or not. But I just can't express what a thrill it's been to work for Mr. Ilitch. You know, when I took this job 8 years ago, when I walked in his office, I said one thing to him. I said, I'll do a good job for you, and that's all I said. I've never socialized with Mr. Ilitch. He has never one time called down and jumped on me about who to play or what to do with the lineup, or he has never complained one time. Now, I'm sure he's had some conversations with Dave on some nights that maybe he wasn't so happy, but I could never have asked for a better owner than Mike Ilitch. I just doesn't have. So, my boss here, I think you're blessed. This organization will move on. I'm prejudiced. I think he's the best baseball executive in the business. And the reason I say that is because I know he has a great talent for hiring managers. But, no, I truly mean that. You're in good hands. You'll be in good hands when he decides on his next manager. And this organization will not miss a beat. To all those people in the front office, that I love you. I probably didn't spend as much time with you as I could have, but I was thinking about you. I know how hard you work, and I appreciate everything you did for me and your loyalty to me as your manager. And I can't ever imagine the thrills that I've had in the last 8 years. You know, to be retired from managing and get a chance to come back and manage the organization you were born in is an unbelievable thrill. I made my mistakes, like they all do. All managers do. I probably was a little grumpy with the press at times, but I can't ever say that I wasn't there for you. I think I did my job. I think I was there for you, and you were there for me. and I appreciate that very much through everything. So I'm going to close in saying so long. Once again, it's in the press release. It's not goodbye because I will remain in the organization doing something. And from the bottom of my heart to the fans, to the media, to this organization, thank you for having me.
Yes, the 68-year-old reportedly told the team after the Game 6 loss to Boston to eliminate the Tigers from the postseason. The ALCS loss was one that will stick with Leland for the foreseeable future.
Well, as you know, I'm very emotional most of the time. I'm not proud of that, but I am. I didn't really think about that. I was so wrapped up in trying to win this thing, and I'm so... I don't want to say embarrassed is a word, but this one really hurt. This one hurt bad because I thought, like, we let one get away. And like I said, we did it collectively. There was no one culprit. As the head of the ball club and the manager, I'm just as guilty as anybody else. I just felt like we let one get away, and that's what hurt more than anything else. I really truly believe, with all due respect to the Boston Red Sox, who earned it, they won it, and they deserve to be where they are. I truly believe the Detroit Tigers should be playing here tomorrow. And this is one that's going to stick with me. This is one that really hurts because I really felt like we let it get away.
Yeah, it's certainly a tough loss. Not the way Jim Leland wanted to walk away from the team. Of course, you know, there was many around here in Tigers land that, you know, thought World Series a bust for the Tigers. Now Jim Leland has decided to leave after 8 seasons with the team. Now, in an emotional presser, Leland reiterated that he will remain with the club in some capacity, though. So, he's not going away. He was extremely proud of his time, though, as skipper.
Well, everybody for years has been saying what a good clubhouse we have, and I keep telling everybody we have a good clubhouse because I never go in it. I let the players take care of it. I expect them to police themselves. I expect them to come ready to play, and I expect them to be accountable. I really do. And I think that that's helped. I don't go out there, this is not to police them or anything. I'm proud of that. I think, but fortunately, at the same time, we have good characters on this team. We have good people. For the most part, when you sit down and talk with them and talk common sense, they understand and they go along with the program. I don't foresee that being a problem. I don't know who Dave's next manager is going to be. I will have nothing to do with that. But I do know that in my case, one of the things that I'm proud about my career is that some managers have to lose the players' respect. And because I was a no player and a double-A guy, I had to earn the players' respect. And that's probably my proudest moment over my entire career. I mean, and I don't mean this wrong because there's nothing wrong with that. But a Lou Piniella, Pete Rose, whoever it was that managed, they had some status when they came in. So they really had to lose the players' respect. But somebody like in my case, I felt like I had to earn the players' respect. I hope I did that.
So, yeah, there you have it. Jim Leland, he has decided to step down as the manager of the Detroit Tigers after 8 seasons. Again, we want you to call in and give your thoughts on Jim Leland's legacy now as he leaves the Tigers. 517-355-9527. How would you grade his overall work throughout those 8 seasons? Again, 517-355-9527. We're going to dive into the Tigers and Jim Leland's announcement this morning in just a sec. Again, give us a call. 517-355-9527. Call now. Current Sports will be right back.
I did my best, but I guess my best wasn't good enough. 'Cause here we are back where we were before. Seems nothing ever changes. We're back to being strangers, wondering if we ought to stay or head on out the door. Just once, can we figure out what we keep doing wrong?
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, the hit TV series Sleepy Hollow reimagines Washington Irving's tale of the Headless Horseman with Ichabod Crane in modern-day America. It could happen.
Crane is missing.
Maybe he found his way back to the revolution.
I think maybe the revolution's on its way back to us.
Next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBR Boston.
Templar Knights, they're the good guys. If they're the good guys, why do they have Crane?
That's Here and Now coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen, and you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Welcome back to Current Sports. If you're wondering why in the world is what's going on with Current Sports' music today, well, in honor of Jim Leland, you know, moving on now, he's decided to step down after 8 years with the Tigers Ball Club. We're rocking out to Jim Leland's favorite songs. He did an interview, and we looked it up, and these are, you'll be hearing Jim Leland's favorite tunes, you know, throughout this entire show. You heard Quincy Jones's Just Once, and that was This I Swear by the Skyliners. I feel like a DJ. I feel like a radio DJ right now. So there you have it. Again, Jim Leland has decided to step down as Detroit Tigers manager after 8 seasons. He hailed an 11:30 a.m. presser this morning to talk about why he stepped down and just felt, there was the fuel in the tank was getting low, and, you know, he felt as though to run. Of course, the Tigers just eliminated from the playoffs this past Saturday with that ALCS loss to the Boston Red Sox. So now I'm joined by Matt Luckey and Alex Sharg as we kind of dive into Jim Leland's legacy. Because, you know, it's something we brought up last week. You know, if the Tigers were to lose, which they have now, were to lose and get eliminated from the playoffs, what would happen to Jim Leland? You know, would he be fired? You know, would he step down? And now we know, of course, he has decided to step down. I didn't see him getting fired at all. I think Jim Leland, and I think you kind of saw that emotion in the press conference, how beloved he is by Dombrowski, by the ownership. They weren't going to, I don't think they were going to fire him. I think, you know, it's fitting that, you know, he gets to step down on his own terms and, you know, now leave this ball club. Overall, just to really quickly, guys, I want to get to a few comments here from individuals who decided to weigh on this, who have tweeted me and left comments on our Facebook page. Megan Ballman. Megan says, who is a huge Tigers fan. I actually know Megan very well. Went to school with Megan. But Megan says, he took a team that had 12 straight years of a losing record to the World Series as his first year as manager. Had a winning record every year since he had been manager, including 2 World Series appearances, 3 straight ALCS appearances, and was around for only 8 years. That's insane. He will definitely be missed. People can blame him for losses as much as they want, but they can't deny he took the Tigers and turned them into one well-known powerhouse program. So there you have it. That's from Megan. Others who have decided to weigh in on our Facebook page say, Mark says, say it ain't so. Tony says, what? No, you got to be kidding me. Jim's leaving? He will be missed. Walter says, horrible. I wish he would have stuck around. Charles has a different opinion. He says, good. He makes terrible decisions in crunch time. And others, you know, kind of the same, saying, whoa, are you serious? He's leaving. They were kind of just shocked at the whole, the breaking news about Jim Leland deciding to step down. So, guys, we heard the presser. What were your initial thoughts on Jim Leland stepping down when you heard it this morning? What was going through your head, Alex?
I think it's just like what a lot of people have commented on. What I was thinking was that he may have been forced out to retire.
You thought he may have been forced.
I think it was the nice way of saying that maybe they'd like a change without actually firing him due to the respect. So I still think that the Tigers organization respects Jim, but I don't think that it was simply him just solely stepping down because he wanted to step down.
Well, no, I mean, he said in the presser, yeah. He had coffee with, was it Dombrowski, I believe, and he sat down, and Dombrowski, you know, they talked about, hey, you know, what's up for next season? And, you know, Dombrowski says, hey, you're my manager. Jim Leland says, no, I'm not returning, you know, and, you know, Jim went on to say that it was only a few people who knew, his wife and a few other people who he consulted because he wanted to do it in a classy way. But he knew, I mean, that, you know, he talked about his traveling. I mean, he's 68 years old now, and traveling was getting to him. And we heard in the bite about, you know, him having to address player issues and dealing with, you know, just dealing with all the things that, you know, come with being a manager. That's a big job. And, you know, Jim just kind of sounded burnt out, and he knew well ahead of time, Alex, that, you know, this was his last go around.
Right. No. When I first heard it, that was my initial reaction. That I think he was forced out.
You thought he was forced
out.
Yeah.
Now that I saw the report and everything, it makes sense.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, when he was on Pittsburgh before, he didn't really do too. I mean, he took them to a World Series. I think he took Pittsburgh to a World Series, didn't he? Or he took them to the playoffs when he was in Pittsburgh.
Well, I know he won Manager of the Year trophies with the Pirates in '90 and '92.
Right.
And finished runner up in 1988 and '91. But I'm not sure about, I know the Pirates went to the National League Championship Series three straight seasons under him in 90, 91, and 92. The Pirates lost all three of those, though, however, and, you know, they would go to the four-seven games.
It seems to be a common theme that between the ALCS and the NLCS, Leland's teams cannot advance either to the World Series or cannot win a World Series.
And that's definitely a legitimate argument. And when you look at it, you know, I kind of, you know, look at this whole – look at Jim Leland's tenure, and you know, I just say, I look right here. They went to, when he was with the Pirates, they went to the NLCS three straight seasons, couldn't get over the hump. It's kind of like almost like a Peyton Manning type of argument. You know, Peyton Manning, he's great in the regular season, but in crunch time, can he deliver? And Jim Leland has fallen short multiple times, and that's what the big knock on Jim Leland.
Right, but at the same time, look at what the Pirates have done since he left.
Right,
this was the first year they made the playoffs since then. So it's, you know, clearly he wasn't the only guy who was, you know, in the wrong in that scenario either. And when you look at his tenure here, it's tough to remember since we've had all this recent success, you know, the three straight division titles, two World Series in his tenure. It's hard to believe just how bad they were before he came on board.
Oh, they were so bad.
And as, you know, over the years, it's not just like he was the only change from the previous tenure. I mean, they definitely acquired talent, but he was able to fold that talent in, fold the egos in. You know, we had the happy clubhouse. We heard the clip about that.
Right.
And it's because he has that hands-off approach. He expects guys to be professionals, and they were. He's a good manager of a veteran team because he expects the best, and he gets the best out of them. And granted, some of his, you know, game day decisions later in the postseason are going to, you know, draw a lot of questions, and that's fine.
That comes with the job.
But we're there. You know?
Yeah, right. That's
consistently,
the thing I
wanna, right, the Tigers are there.
Are there. And that's the thing I want to hit on because this is the personal Al Martin opinion. I loved Jim Leland the entire eight seasons he was here. I loved his personality. I loved his blue collar type of chip on his shoulder, type of emotional type of feel that he brought to the team. I thought it was great for the team. And if you look at what he did throughout his tenure here, again, you talk about three straight ALCS appearances. This is baseball, guys. That's tough to do in the game of baseball. Looking at the amount of games you play, the competition that's out there, to be able to do that alone, if you just look at that alone, that's unbelievable. And to really turn, just, and you go, I go back to what you just said, Matt, looking at exactly how bad the Tigers were, you know, a team that had 12 straight years of a losing record, and Jim Leland comes in, turns things around, did not have a losing record since his entire tenure when he was here with Detroit. I mean, that's saying a lot. Again, you can always make the argument that he didn't get the Tigers over the hump, but that's not a 100% entirely Jim Leland's fault. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, players got to go out there and do their job as well. And there's a lot of nitpicking, and you know, that you can look at with this Tigers team here and in the past throughout Jim Leland's tenure that you can point at and say, hey, they didn't make it because of this too. They didn't make it because of that. Pitching, you know, back in the day, timely hitting, situational hitting. There's a lot of things you can point at that aren't Jim Leland's fault. So I think it's a load of crap, honestly, when people, you know, come with that argument. I mean, you can definitely make it because, you know, a lot of people are stats guys. They look it on the paper. What have you done for me lately? And the Tigers haven't got over that hump. And then, you know, you go back to the World Series last season, them getting swept. There were questionable decisions, of course, if you look at that that game Saturday. You know, why was Scherzer pulled out the game? You know, and you know, that's a decision that falls on Jim Leland. You know, and you could definitely look at those things and make a very valid argument for your dislike and rejoicing of Jim Leland now being gone from this ball club. But I think overall, when you look at his overall body of work, it's admirable. I think I really do think it is very admirable. And you look at the you know, the management, the relationship that he has with the players love him. Like I said, you talked about being in the ball clubhouse, you know, in the locker room. Jim Leland just lets them just do what they do. He expects a certain level of professionalism and a certain level of worth ethic that you have to bring. If that's not there, Jim is going to get in your butt at the end of the day. But overall, I've been very pleased with the 8 seasons. I don't know. You guys got anything?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can really complain. Yes, you know, they didn't get that World Series title, but at the same time, you know, they achieved more than they have since the 80s. You know, they're back as a relevant team. They're favorites for the AL Central again next year, regardless of what happens in the offseason. But you could see the writing on the wall. You know, the last 2 seasons he's managed on one-year deals. You know, he obviously mentioned talking about it earlier in the season that this is my last year, I'm done. You know, he's just ready to ride off into the sunset. I'm glad he said that he was going to get a job in the Tigers organization in some capacity. I like that. I like him retiring as a Tiger. I think he's earned it.
Right.
You know, you tip your cap to him.
Yeah, you do. That's all you can do at the end of the day. And, you know, his body of work speaks for itself. We actually have a caller on line one, Jack from Hazard. How you doing, Jack? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
Well, you know, I'm sure everybody that follows any baseball at all has got some kind of opinion on the Leland situation. I'm probably no different, but I'm somewhere a little more in the middle, I think. You talk about his body of work, and that is true. And if you liken it to any other job that people have, you know, staying in the same positions, particularly in a environment that is competitive like that, is not going to get you to the promised land. It's not going to get you to the next step. It's not necessarily, at some point down the road, it's not going to get you the next year's contract. The downside to it for some people is that just because somebody doesn't achieve a certain level, you don't need to give a character assassination on top. And that's kind of where I'm at. I think Leland's a good guy. I think he was a needed commodity for the team. He fit nicely with where they were trying to go. And, they brought in, but you got to admit one thing, they brought in a lot of good talent for him.
Yeah,
so it isn't like he was operating at the bottom like when they lost 103 games.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Jay, you're kind of on the argument of, you know, not getting over that hump. Getting that World Series ring.
Yeah, I think it, not because of Jim Leland. It could have been a lot of other people. I mean, I didn't like the pitch count thing. And I think a little bit, just an added thing to all of this is, and it's just speculative on my part, but the Scherzer thing, remember when Scherzer had he gave up a hit, but virtually a no-hitter going early on. And Scherzer did the right thing in saying, taking a company line, saying, well, he was burned out. But Leland, for all practical purposes, pulled him on that one. Then he got a lot of heat for it. And when Scherzer was right back in a similar situation, I'd be damned, Leland did it again.
Right.
So it was always about his way, and he was adamant about that. So, it was all the way around. It was just time, that's all.
It was time.
You know, and they'll make some changes this next year and probably bring in a good manager, and they'll fill the park again.
Definitely. Hey, Jack, thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye.
Well, yeah, I mean, and that, you know, to be honest with you, I mean, a lot of Tigers fans out there have that same opinion. They love him as a person. You know, he did a great job. His body of work was there. But as far as, you know, getting over that hump and getting the ring, you know, the argument is that, you know, Jim Leland, he didn't get there. And And I totally understand an argument. I mean, you can't argue with that at the end of the day, to be honest with you, because, you know, he got there, but he just didn't he didn't close the deal. And a lot of fans out there, and looking at the amount of, you go back, you know, because Jim Leland used this phrase a lot in his presser. You know, he wanted to bring, when he came to Detroit, he said he wanted to bring talent to team, which he did. Incredible talent is on this team. You talk about Max Scherzer, and you talk about, you know, Justin Verlander, Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder in a regular season. Overall, I mean, this team is arguably the most talented team in baseball. At the end of the day, Tigers fans are frustrated because if you got the talent, you got to put those pieces together and you got to win World Series rings, and Jim simply didn't do that. And that's where the criticism, that's where the blunt of the criticism is coming from when you look at Jim Leland's tenure. And, but say what you will. For me personally, just this Al Martin's opinion, just me personally, I loved Jim Leland when he was here. I loved his work ethic. I loved the attitude that he brought to the team. And I'm not putting every single time that the Tigers came up short solely on Jim Leland's shoulders.
Right, and I think, you know, maybe his legacy is determined by whoever his successor is and what they do next season and the year after that. You know, if the Tigers do, you know, clear that hurdle and win the World Series in the next couple of years, then maybe that argument does gain some traction. But let's say they take a couple steps back and, you know, I mean, they're going to have a high payroll next year too, depending on what they decide to do with Scherzer. Right. You know, they're going to be probably in the top five again. It'll be interesting to see where they move forward, because maybe it is. Maybe it's just a case where Jim Leland is a guy who takes you from point A to point B, and then they have to bring somebody else to take him to point C and win the championship.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, when Rick Carlisle was with
exactly.
With
and
the
then,
Pistons, you
and
know,
then they let him Larry go, Brown. Hire Larry Brown, win the title. And it's a great move, even though Carlisle is probably, you know, now certainly just as good of a coach.
He's great.
I mean, he's a great coach.
I think,
Dallas.
You know, to be honest with you, looking at that, I think Rick Carlisle would have won a ring if they would have kept him running.
I think so, too.
I mean,
they were just.
They brought in Rashid. That helped out a lot.
That's a different argument.
That's a different argument there. Yeah.
My question to you guys is, who do you think the Tigers look for as the successor to Jim Leland?
Man, that's a good. Alex, you want to?
I think it's going to be Charlie the Hot Dog Guy. I think he's shown a lot of promise. I think he's got a lot going on.
Charlie the Hot Dog Guy. Yep. I don't know who that is, but it won't be that brother.
The Singing Hot Dog Man.
The singing hat, though? Who is that?
Was he not
fired earlier in the season?
I think
there's some bad blood there, Alex. I don't know if he's a viable
But they let him go because of some side issues with fans. I think the organization loves him.
So he has trouble dealing with fans, and they're going to put him as the most visible
member. You can't be liked by everybody.
I know one person on our Facebook page has decided to weigh in on that. Jeremy says Joe Torre.
Joe Torre, I don't think he's going to come out of retirement.
I don't think he will either. I think Joe Torre's done.
Joe Torre might have done it to coach in L.A.
Right.
Or to manage in L.A. because that's a beautiful city and it's nice and sunny there. Beautiful. I don't know if he's going to come to Detroit.
He's not coming to the DM.
as far as me, my dream candidate, and this will never happen, would be Joe Maddon from the Tampa Bay Rays because I think he's the best manager in baseball.
That is a dream. I don't think that's going to happen,
it's not going to happen. The most realistic candidate, and I've heard these two names a while, for, you know, the last 3 hours or so. Dusty Baker, not interested. Charlie Manuel, I am interested. I think Charlie Manuel,
I could see.
Fit.
Yeah, that'd be
that'd
nice.
That'd be a very nice fit. But
because
yeah,
I mean, he has the World Series title.
Right.
Commanded the respect of a clubhouse that had a lot of star power in Philadelphia. I mean, when he was let go, his players were like sobbing and, you know, took the blame for him getting fired just because they weren't performing well. I mean, that's a team that cared about the guy. He's just as old as Jim Leland. He's actually a year older. So I don't know if people might be saying, let's go younger. I don't know if that is the right
But you know
call,
what? Bringing in a guy who's been there before is what the Tigers need right now.
Right.
They
if
need
you
a guy
have
$130
million payroll, you need somebody who's going to come in and get the respect of everybody right off the bat.
Right. A guy who's been there. He knows what it takes to win. He knows the adjustments you got to make. He's been there before. You need a guy with that experience to bring that to a ball club. And, you know, we'll see. And I definitely agree with you, you know, when you talk about, you know, the aspect of Jim Leland's legacy being, you know, kind of validated or measured based on what the next manager does. Because, you know, if a manager does come in here and the Tigers, let's say the Tigers, you know, heaven forbid, miss the playoffs. Then you can kind of look at Jim Leland and say, wow, we missed a guy now. You know what
I mean?
Right.
And he'll just be smoking cigarettes
and
laughing it up.
Right. Smoking his Marlboro Reds.
As the Detroit media goes crazy.
Exactly. Again, if you want to weigh on this, give us a call, 517-355-9527. Jim Leland, bids the Tigers adieu. 517-355-9527. When we come back, we'll talk MSU football. Don't go anywhere. More current sports is coming right back.
On the next Fresh Air, we explore the breathtaking dimensions of the Lance Armstrong doping scandal, a network of conspirators, group blood transfusions on the team bus, and extensive efforts to silence and intimidate those who might expose the abuse. We'll speak with Reed Albergati and Vanessa O'Connell about their new book, Wheelmen. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. Again, we are playing Jim Leland's greatest hits. These are some of Jim Leland's favorite songs. We're playing this in honor of Jim Leland bidding the Tigers adieu after eight seasons. Yes, Jim Leland has decided to step down as Detroit Tigers manager after eight seasons. We played you a few clips from his 11:30 a.m. presser. All right, well, let's move on. Again, we're taking your call still throughout the entire show, about 20 minutes left. If you want to weigh in on your thoughts on Jim Leland's legacy and the job he did while he was here, 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Let's dig into some MSU football really quick. But really, before that, I want to note, just give you some quick updates. We won't get to our headlines today, but I want to give some quick updates on the MSU men's soccer weekend in the fourth double overtime game of the season. The number 14th ranked Michigan State men's soccer team, they lost a hard-fought battle against number 17 Penn State. Penn State, of course, is number one in the Big Ten Conference. Of course, that game was held at DeMartin Stadium. The Spartans are now 8-2-2 on the season, including 1-1-1 in the conference. Now, Penn State improved to 9-3 and 4-0. Yes, they are undefeated in the Big Ten. The Spartans led the Nittany Lions at the half with 10-6 on goal, but Penn State took 5 corner kicks in the first half, while MSU had a big donut. None. Penn State earned the equalizer in the 50th minute of the game as Drew Klinkenberg sent in a goal just past Bennett's hands in the far left post from 25 yards out. It was assisted by Owen Griffin. Now the Spartans, they head back out for a 3-game road stretch as they travel to Akron on Wednesday, October 23rd. That's right, in 2 days at 7:30 p.m. And the MSU volleyball team, Michigan State, had another rough road outing on Sunday despite taking the opening set. They watched Wisconsin rally for 3 stretch set victories, in a 3-1 Badger win. Fifth-ranked MSU drops its second straight contest to fall 17-3 on the year and is now 6-2 in the Big Ten. Number 15 Wisconsin improves to 16-4. 5-3 in the Big Ten. The Spartans have a quick turnaround hosting arch rival Michigan on Wednesday at Jenison Fieldhouse for the annual Jam Jenison game. The start time for that is 7 p.m. All right, MSU and Purdue, folks, let's dive into Michigan State's football game this past Saturday. MSU topped Purdue on Saturday in a shutout, 14-0 win. The game's first touchdown came on a 45-yard fumble recovery by star linebacker Denicos Allen after fellow backer nailed Purdue quarterback Danny Etling on a blitz. And that was all the Spartans needed for the win, to be honest with you. The Spartan offense did eventually get on the board itself with a trick play pass receiver Tony Lippett to backup tight end Andrew Gleichert with 9 minutes left in the game. Now, Purdue had some mild successes over the course of the game, but 2 Paul Griggs field goal attempts into the win fell short, preserving the Spartans' shutout in making MSU's fourth quarter touchdown a clincher. Now, Connor Cook went 13 for 25 for 107 yards, although at one point he only had 17 yards on 8 completions. Come on, son. Etling, he was 14 for 25 for 160 yards. Jeremy Langford, wow, he's been great, hasn't he? He had 131 yards on 24 carries for Michigan State. Now, while the Spartans were really just struggling offensively, punter Mike Sadler, he's been great so far. He gave them a lift, landing 3 punts inside the 10-yard line. That's pretty good. Shout out to Mike Sadler. Got to show the punters, the kickers, some love sometimes. So, all right, guys, let's dive right into this. Of course, Current Sports is at the game. Guys, we were there in the press box watching the game throughout its entirety. Cook, got to get this off my chest. Connor Cook, I think, you know, you talk about Connor Cook. Growing pains. That's something, you know, you're going to hear me say a lot, I think, throughout the rest of this season. Cook, again, he didn't look like himself as opposed to the previous two games before this one. His accuracy is something definitely I saw. It was definitely a question.
Let me just say this, Al.
What?
As Dennis Green once said, they're not who we thought we were.
Well, you know, it's one game, though. I think Connor Cook, he's a young quarterback still, and you saw that he still has a long way to go to become a great quarterback, to become a good quarterback, to be honest with you. I mean, his accuracy is in question. At the half, just really disturbing numbers. He was 6 for 11 at the half for 21 yards. The longest play through the air for Connor Cook was a measly 8 yards. That's not good. And we saw multiple times throughout that game where Cook just didn't he doesn't see the field as well as I thought he did. Like you said, he was who I you know, I looked at him these past few games and I said, okay, he seems to, you know, really locate receivers well. But I didn't see that this past Saturday. It's like all that went out the window. I don't know. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, he's not who you thought he was.
Yeah, exactly. That's
it. No, the other part of it is we talk about this every week. It's the fact that, he only had eight yards passing. That was his longest play.
In that first half.
But how about a lot of the play calling? Because a lot of them were flat routes, a lot of just like short in, short slants. It's not like they went downfield at all. And we were talking about this, that he rarely took a shot downfield that whole game. I think maybe once or twice
right,
he went downfield the whole game.
Right.
So maybe that was more of a scouting thing, that Purdue corners were playing ready to play him deep. Maybe Narduzzi looked at or maybe Bowman looked at that. I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
Well, you know, they missed Fowler. They really did, and I don't know if I would have thought that earlier in the year that I'd ever be saying that, but yeah, they really missed Benny Fowler, and Burbridge went out after the first series, so they're down two receivers, clearly out of rhythm. They had a couple intermediate throws early that were way off, bad incompletions, and then they did. They went away from the intermediate to deep passing game and just kept everything. It was either a quick screen or like you said, just a throw to the flat.
I remember I noted in my notes in the third quarter, third and eight, and, you know, you got to get past the six, and they're throwing a flat route towards the sidelines. I'm saying, like, what is going on? I mean, overall, great point, Matt, because they were missing Fowler and Burbridge gets hurt. But at the same time, looking at that game, though, Cook, I mean, I don't care what receiver was out there. I think you would have got the same result based on what Cook was doing out there.
Yeah, guys were open. Know? Guys were open, and
they
he just
open,
wasn't
man.
Hitting them.
Right.
And, I mean, you'd have guys run just a curl route, and he would throw it 6 feet over his head, and
exactly.
It would just be another incompletion. A lot of it reminded me of Iowa last year, the homecoming loss. It was a sloppy morning, bad turnout from the crowd.
Yeah.
Student section.
Yeah, that
What's
was.
What's going
did
on,
did
guys?
Did it look bad? That's the one thing I want to talk about. Yeah, if you look at that student section that we saw, not even just the student section, the entire crowd. I mean, I saw a lot of empty seats.
It was bad. It was a bad turnout.
Bad.
I know that it's, you know, a rainy morning, guys.
They're
it's nice
Purdue.
To get a little extra sleep, but you bought those tickets. Come out and support your team.
Exactly.
It was a quick game. You only had to be there for 3 hours.
Right.
And you were out of there.
Exactly.
And
then you go to the bar. Do whatever you want, right?
Once the game started, it was relatively dry, but it was just a sloppy effort all around.
Yeah, looking at the top near that scoreboard and looking at the student section, I mean, there was like a huge chunk that was just empty.
Yep.
It looked bad.
It was bad, but it might be a blessing in disguise. I know Graham Couch wrote about it in the LSJ that, you know, the effort needed to happen this past week instead of this upcoming week, because this game at Illinois is your classic trap game. You know, Michigan coming in the next week.
Right.
It's a road game against a Big Ten team that isn't great by any stretch. they could surprise us. I don't think that's going to happen today or now, just because of the poor effort against Purdue. I think they're going to have a better week of practice this week, just looking to get fired up after last week and to prove themselves that they are a Legends Division contender, because the way they played Saturday,
they're not going to be close. Like it. No, not at all. I mean, and going against the Illinois team, Illinois has really revamped their offense, and their passing attack, their aerial assault through the air is something that they pride themselves on this season. And you know what I saw? Something I also took note was that overall, Purdue did have its moments offensively. And you know, they won the field position battle early, but they did have their moments where, you know, you saw holes here and there in that MSU defense. That's something I don't think a lot of people are talking about today. Etling, you know, he found spots here and there. The thing that it really doesn't show up on the stats is that when they did get down and did move, when Purdue did move the ball down the field and get close to the red zone, they just totally erupted. I mean, penalties here and there, you know, the pass pressure, that is props to the MSU defense, because once they did get close to that red zone, it's like the MSU defense turned up a notch, and the pass pressure on Etling, I mean, he was running like a chicken with his head cut off, you know, through a lot of those moments once they got close. You know, you talk about those missed field goals, they didn't put points up. I mean, there were two missed field goals that, you know, just, you know, Purdue special teams just couldn't convert on. So, you know, overall, Purdue, they did have their moments, but it's like MSU just turned it up, I mean, when they needed to do. And looking at, you know, those certain moments where Purdue did have success through the air, MSU is going to have to tighten it up a little bit more against an Illinois team that can definitely, you know, pose a threat, you know, downfield in many spots. Overall, if you want to look at a positive note for the MSU offense, Jeremy Langford, outstanding. Jeremy Langford is a guy who I could definitely see, you know, making a lot of noise for some years to come. And I think, you know, his performance this past weekend sort of solidifies his spot now as that number one back. We saw Delton sparingly. Nick Hill, I don't even remember him in the game. You know, Langford was the primary guy in that backfield. He's very quick. He's more of a finesse back. I think if you look at Delton Williams, which I think, and I'll go on the record of saying this, I think in the coming weeks they'll use Delton more as the weeks go by. I think you may see a lot of Delton possibly this upcoming weekend against Illinois, to be honest with you, because Delton is more of a power back, and that's not so much what Langford is. He's more of a finesse, quick guy, you know, seep through the cracks here and there. But Jeremy Langford is the clear number one guy, though, in that backfield now.
Yeah, he's emerged, and I think he actually played better against Purdue than he did against Indiana. And I know he had four touchdowns against Indiana, and he put up the big fantasy stats, but at the same time, Indiana is terrible defensively.
Yeah, they're bad.
I mean, we saw Michigan.
Take it with a grain of
salt. It was a track meet. But the blocking this week was not nearly as good as it was against Indiana. Purdue's defensive line penetrated MSU's offensive line frequently. And Langford had a couple plays where they should have been losses of 5 yards, and instead he would break a tackle and, you know, squirt upfield for six.
He's very elusive.
And that's huge in the grander scheme. You can't take negative plays in the run game. And he's a powerful runner. Like you said, he is more of a finesse, kind of a shifty guy.
Right.
But he kind of reminds me of Edwin Baker a little bit, where he's fast, he's shifty, but at the same time, he's built like a rock.
Yeah, and he can break a few tackles.
And he will break arm tackles if you try and you know, get him down. Just if you don't use proper technique, he's going to run through you.
Exactly.
And that's big. You need a guy who's going to get the extra yards. And I think both Williams and Langford can be that guy. And like you said, I think Langford has emerged as the clear-cut number one guy featured back.
Without a doubt. Again, Jeremy Langford had 131 yards on 24 carries. I do think, though, we'll see Delton this weekend, I think.
I think so, too. Illinois is bad against the run. They got run up by Wisconsin,
very bad.
Sure.
Yeah. And you know, another thing that's so frustrating, though, guys, and we took note of it when we were up in the press box. Alex, you brought up MSU's play calling. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If your run game is what's killing your opponent, why deviate from that and even, start passing the ball more than running it? I don't get that.
Especially when your quarterback can't hit the broadside of a barn.
Exactly.
Which Cook could
stop
not Saturday.
Forcing it. Yeah, stop forcing it, man. If the run game is going well, stick with it. All right. Well, there's MSU football for you. We'll dive in a little bit more on that tomorrow. Really briefly, guys, we got about 7 minutes left. The Detroit Lions, I definitely want to talk about the Lions really quick because they kind of let one just slip away from him, to be honest with you. Despite Calvin Johnson's return to form, he was unbelievable. The Detroit Lions fell short against the Cincinnati Bengals, losing 27-24 on a last-second field goal from Bengals kicker Mike Nugent. Now, after erasing an 11-point deficit in the second half, the Lions had a chance to win when they took the field with a minute and 43 left and 94 yards to the end zone. But when the drive fizzled out and rookie punter Sam Martin shanked his 28-yard kick to midfield, the Bengals promptly set up for the game-winning field goal, a 54-yarder from Nugent. Martin's punt wasn't the only special teams gaffe. Now, as kicker David Akers had a field goal blocked earlier in the game, I mean, if you look at that play alone, I mean, if that doesn't happen, it could be a totally different game. We could be talking about overtime, Lions possibly winning in overtime. But Matthew Stafford connected with Calvin Johnson for two scores, and Megatron finished with 9 catches for 155 yards, including a redonkulous catch over 3 Bengals for a 50-yard TD score. Megatron was in rare form, guys. Thoughts on the Lions? To be honest with you, they just blew it. And I don't get how, looking at that last drive, they took the field, a minute and 43 left, staring at 94 yards. The drive stalls based on, I think, they ran on the first play and then two incomplete passes by Matthew Stafford. Fourth down comes. And you leave 34 seconds on the clock for the Bengals to possibly go down the field and do something. Now, looking at the entire game, the Lions secondary has to get better. The Lions secondary was terrible. Terrible all game, so many holes throughout that game. If there was really no shining light for the Lions secondary throughout that game. Chris Houston, I think.
Yeah, like he's bad. He's still like smoldering because of how bad he got burned by AJ Green yesterday.
Exactly,
all day long.
All day. It was
the 82-yard touchdown. He got turned around so bad. Oh my goodness, that should not happen to a professional cornerback.
And you know, after the game, he even said that he would have bitched himself.
That's yeah, saying a lot. Rightfully so. But the thing is, like, the Lions, their secondary, they have two really good safeties in Quinn and Delmas. And Delmas is obviously more of a run stopper.
Right.
And he came up, he had some big plays on Giovanni Bernard. Those little screen flat passes. But the corners are terrible.
Bad.
You can have all the pass rush you want. If guys can't stay within 15 yards, I mean, Andy Dalton, he had great numbers.
Right.
He was not great. He had a couple balls that if he puts them on the money, they're easy touchdowns for the Bengals. But he didn't. And we were able to recover and make tackles. But, you know, you just look at how they gave the game away. And Megatron's catch over the 3 Bengals.
That was one of the greatest catches I've ever witnessed.
Probably on par with the one he had against Dallas a few years ago where he went up over 3 guys. Yeah. It's just insane what the guy can do.
He's so tall. He's like a basketball player just throwing him an alley-oop. You know he's bigger than everybody else. He's so tall.
It does not matter how many guys are on him. He's going to jump over all of them and come down with the football. But the big thing that stuck out to me, and you were mentioning it, is that the 2-minute drill. Is there a more frustrating team to watch run the 2-minute drill? I don't know if you can say they run it. They walk the 2-minute drill than the Lions. They are so nonchalant.
Yeah.
About getting up to the line and getting off another play.
Right.
It's embarrassing.
It's just they just walk through it, walk through the motions.
You know,
you sit
Stafford's
there like,
given the hand signals, and it's, you know, there's 20 seconds that just went by.
There's no sense of urgency at all. It came to bite them, and you give this Bengals team who were beating you down the field all game, you give them 34 seconds to work with, and it ends up biting you in the butt. Another thing is, you know, something I noted watching that game, Rasim Mathis isn't bad. He had a few good stops. Until he got beat downfield, I believe it was the Bengals tight end. I forget his
Eifert.
Name.
Eifert.
Yeah, Eifert. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Before he was just out of position.
And he's gonna lose that battle because Eifert's got about 6 inches.
Right.
On him.
Exactly. He does. You know what I mean? But overall, I thought if there was some shining light on that defense, I thought Rasim Mathis had a decent game. Reggie Bush proved that he had some spurts here and there. He's a great open field player, but his production kind of just slowly fizzled out as the game went on. That outstanding defensive line by the Lions. They were great. I thought they were great. Sue, again, fairly. Those guys have been so consistent throughout this entire season. And got to give props to Sue. You know, he's just kind of, you know, he's probably the most hated man in the NFL right now. He's getting fined left and right. But he goes out there, and he's been having a great, great season. We talked about it last week. It's kind of been shoved under the rug and kind of not been noted because of all those stupid penalties and fines he's been getting, right?
Yeah, and when he sacked Dalton to get the ball back to the Lions with a minute 43 left, I definitely thought the Lions were going to win. I thought they were going to march down the field. I mean, they had so much momentum there.
Right, without a doubt.
And then
I thought the same thing.
The saddest 2-minute drill. Oh,
it was bad.
I can't get over it.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, and it ended up, you know, proven to be their fate. All right, well, yeah, before we leave.
And with Calvin's touchdown, he's now the third player in Lions history with 60-plus touchdowns, joining Barry Sanders and Herman Moore.
Yeah, when I saw him break that and move up the list, I was like, wow. You know what I mean? I had to tweet that. That was unbelievable. Well, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Shard, Matt Ludke, engineer Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. You can listen to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day. Again, Jim Leland. He bids the Tigers adieu after 8 seasons. Well, he's still going to be with the ball club, so it's not like he's totally leaving, folks. Don't be sad. Again, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.